the president, CEO of the Calgary Flames, the sports extravaganza, right? That's what it is. Ken King, how are you?
You know what? Let me be completely unambiguous about this, all right? I am a very stickler for punctuality, and I was up at 4:30 this morning, thought I could jam a couple of meetings in before this one, and I'm stuck in our success, which is called our traffic. I would not accept that excuse. I was supposed to be here at 8 o'clock, and I wasn't, so I apologize profusely. Now, I know the world will not be a worse place because nobody got to listen to me, but I'm just very angry at myself.
We'll hold it over your head to try and get you back.
Yeah, we'll just we'll use it here and there when we when
I was
we
interested, though, in Rhett's musings about training because he is, of course, one of the all-time great off-season trainers.
I was on the board one year, Ken. Bench press.
No, you were.
Do you agree with some of his philosophies?
Actually, I do. You sound more intelligent all the time. I don't know how old you're
age,
get.
Right?
But yeah, the bike tests get hips get tight. So I'm told. I don't cycle, so I'll take people's words on it.
But, I think you should take the guys out to the farm and throw bales and do hard work and move muscles all in different directions. All of this specific system stuff, I think, gets your muscles into a place that aren't flexible.
Would you agree with me, though, on the fact that it has completely not taken off, maybe is a better word than changed, from 15 years ago?
Yeah, and
rightfully so.
Of course, presumably. I mean, they're paid more. They're higher profile. They're far higher demands on them than ever before, which is all justifiable and everything else. And just one has to figure out how well prepared can you be before you get over prepared.
You hear that with goalies? Oh, I put on 8-10 pounds, or I took off 8-10 pounds. Well, that's bad or that's good. You never know till they get on the ice, and then everything that. You know, the composition and everything's different than what they're used to.
We had a pretty fair to middling goalie in our system, and while I did not look at him naked, I saw him with his shirt off, and he would not have looked anything less like an athlete than anybody in this city. But he was very flexible, and he stopped a lot of pucks with the help of Rhett and their friends. So, and I don't know what his training regimen was, but boy, he was a good goalie.
He could stretch, let's say that. He really stretch.
Mika, of course, you're talking about.
Gumby Kiprusoff,
Now, with him in the room, because I know just seeing him in visitor's room or the odd time, because you wouldn't see it in the Flames room, but it was hours, right? Like his game day.
And that's the thing. He came across as the laid-back, he would go out for the morning skates, and then he'd go into the training room, and they bought this stretching apparatus.
Yeah, it's like a torture.
Yeah, and he would...
It's still there. Yeah. I don't think anybody used it.
He'd sit on that thing for, hours.
Yeah.
And just, I don't even know what he did, because he just walked by him. It was like he was part of the goofy apparatus, didn't even notice him there, but...
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. That was his thing.
So
what's new? What's going on?
What is new? What's going on? Season's coming. Stampeders.
It's a great job for somebody with attention deficit disorder I've got, I can tell you that.
Always something going
on. Yeah, it is. It's really neat. This time of the year, with the football team going, and notwithstanding the Montreal game, Huffnagel's done such a great job with that team, and he's always been able to compensate for injuries. He's always got depth. The new team of Burke and Treliving is really exciting to be around and to listen to and to listen to people listening to them because, of course, they exhibit so much confidence. And they're a great team. I always felt strongly that the structure would be better with a president of hockey operations or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
A senior guy and a GM, because the pressure on GMs, the job, and Rhett knows this, the job of a GM is massive. I mean, you're running a $100 million operating budget. You're responsible for recruiting talent, hiring and firing coaches, and pretty much on your own, and you'll do it under a microscope in front of everybody. And I think Brad is better for having Brian, and Brian is better for having Brad. And I think we may have one of the best hockey management combinations going.
I've always wanted to ask you this question. Indulge with some details when it comes time to approach Brian Burke about the possibility of maybe coming to Calgary. How does this conversation start? What is the general feel of the conversation? And then when he finally is in, how did that all kind of take place?
It was great fun. We went to the King Eddie Hotel, and it was like Clouseau sneaking in, right? I mean, it's a comedy.
King Eddie, wow.
Exactly.
Deep undercover.
Exactly. Deep cover. Yeah. I think it's across the street from some bar that he went to, and I think I might have went there once myself. We close it up, and he begins by telling me unceremoniously that I don't want your job, and I don't get it. And I said, okay, well, that's fine. It'll probably be a shorter conversation. But we had a good long conversation, explained the process, explained the theory behind it. And he's told the story himself many times. He said, you know what? I get it. And he's a very highly, highly intelligent guy. And he said, I get it. I understand. He said, I am interested in it. And when we left, we were close to a handshake. It wasn't very complicated after that. Brian is a very straightforward guy, and he understood what we were looking for and that he was the best guy. When I told him that one of his very best friends said, you know, he'll be a better at that job than a GM. He growled at me. He said, who said that? I said, it doesn't mean you're a bad GM. It just means that this could be your perfect calling. And I think it actually is. And I think you're seeing a lot of that. And he's very, very happy.
Because it had to be one of those things. He's notoriously stubborn.
Yeah,
To be won over in that short a time. He obviously quite a sell job.
Yeah, and you know what? He didn't have to have this job. He had lots of options, lots of opportunities. And I said to him, well, what are you going to do when one of those big fancy teams out east comes calling on you to be their GM? He said, I'm yours. He said, I am working for you. I think he has said publicly, this will be my last job in hockey. And I hope it's a long, long time from now, because he's a very high quality individual in terms of, he brought us a lot of street creds and he brought us a lot of experience, and he gives a great backup to Brad.
Do you think that by bringing him in last year that it immediately trickled into the room?
Yeah.
Because it sure seemed that way.
Absolutely really? Do. I think, and in deference to the people that preceded him who worked very hard and tried very hard and did some very good things. I think there's a tendency in this business that you're a genius or you're an idiot. I think neither of those two things are ever true. But I think he immediately, and adrenaline is the right terminology, it was an injection right off the hop, and you could feel his presence.
I think it even did it to the fan base. I remember we were at Bankers Hall when that came down, and you just, again, not to disparage the people from before, but it just felt like all of a sudden.
Well, it felt like everybody could have walked out of the Bankers Hall high-fiving people going, Burke.
Everyone sat
on the They got him. Yeah. They got him. Isn't he supposed to be in New York or Toronto or Philadelphia or some place like that? And he, I mean, he's in only the inimitable style that he can portray. He said, you know what? I think in my previous life, I was a Alberta guy.
Wow.
he is one of us.
Isn't he?
He absolutely is one of us.
Because there, too, we said that day, it's like, I can see the Stampede time. He's got the boots and the hat, and he's in the parade. I can totally see it.
Well, it's hard to get a hat that big. Really?
Yeah.
Come on, have you seen a...
Yeah, well,
they make cowboy hats with riding helmets underneath them, and they're ridiculous.
Still dodgy.
So if you take the helmet out...
Yeah.
Now, tell us a bit about him, because he has this gruff exterior when he... The way he presents to the media is not how he presents to his colleagues, is what people will tell you when they're near him. How different is the perception that many people have of Brian versus the guy you work with?
You know, I had a wonderful relationship with Daryl, and it was challenging in lots of different ways. He brought us so much, as Rhett knows, and of course the other aspect of what he did didn't work out quite as well as he wanted or that we wanted. And you know, when Los Angeles called, I said, permission to talk to him. I said, you can, as long as you give me a ring when he wins you a Stanley Cup, which is, of course, exactly what he did twice. But Brian, in working, is a professional. He's very respectful. Matter of fact, too much. He calls me boss. I said, how about if we don't do that? And the way we've struck it, and John Bean, and if we're going to talk about our whole organizational structure a little bit, is more of a partnership. It's not a boss and a guy. You tell me what to do or who asks. If you have partners, you don't change policy without communicating with the other guy. You don't go away for 2 weeks and say, "Gee, I wonder where my partner is." And it's a great and thoughtful and professional relationship. He's charming beyond terms with people in the office. They love him because he's kind. He's generous with his time. He will do anything for the organization, publicly, privately, or if any individual needed anything, he would just do anything at all. So that gruff exterior, I laughed. Somebody said, "Well, what's your biggest problem with him?" I said, "Well, knowing when he's mad." I used a different terminology than that, but because it's sometimes hard to tell, right?
there are a number of stories, and there's a ton of them out there that he would never tell you, like when you go to Afghanistan to visit with soldiers and they're going to cook the meal for all the guests, and he's like, "Get the hell out of here, we're cooking." He gets behind the grill, now he's cooking steak. The stories of that are
Brian the human
is like
Brian the professional is a very high quality individual. And organizationally, if you go back to the beginning of our organization, Harley and Doc and all those guys, and now Murray and Jeff and Al and Alvin and those guys who are wonderful people to represent. Like, we don't have any controversies of any kind. And he just fits in there perfectly. I think it's really great for the organization.
I was speaking with someone, doesn't matter, within the game, that was, I asked, Brad Treliving, what are your thoughts? He's like, terrific guy. And the one thing that he brought up to me that I hadn't really thought of, I think everybody is very familiar with the family, the Treliving family, there is considerable wealth, was that Brad didn't need to be slugging away in the East Coast League or the American League or, doing these other jobs. Didn't have to be working as hard or as much as he was, but he loved it in spite of everything else and has worked extremely hard with this being the end goal.
Yeah, you know what? He did have to work that hard because that's what, he's not his family. His dad is his dad. His dad is famous in his own right. And Brad is his individual. This guy isn't going to ever clip coupons from the family trust. He's going to make everything that he makes on his own work and on his own back. And I'm sure his dad applauds him. I hope we see him around the rink, but he'll be there to support him. He's not going to be there to buy him a new car. Brad is a self-made guy. This whole notion that from wealthy families, the kids can sit around and do nothing is nonsense. Those families got wealthy because they all worked.
Has he brought a different and a unique approach to it that you've picked up on?
Well, I've watched. It's been nearly 15 years for me now, so I've watched a few guys in that chair. And Brad is they all have some similar characteristics. I mean, you go through the draft process, but he is unique. I think his work ethic is constant. And again, I think he's afforded a little luxury because he can go into that other office with Brian and say, "Hey, you know what? This is what I'm thinking about." I think one of the downfalls of the business is you kind of live or die, and I don't think that has to be the case. Corporately, you would never bet your company on this is what I think we should do today. You'd never do that. But in sports, somehow it seems like you should vest all of your resources into one person and hope that they're having a good day the day they make that big decision about who to draft or anything else. So a little more consensus and surrounding those people with resources, both research resources. And, it's not only Brian and Brad, but we got Berkey's in there and Holditch and Brad Pascal and Craig Conroy. It's deep. And I take some pride in the sense of helping to assemble that. And you look at our Roughnecks, John Bean is the executive of the year for the Lacrosse League. He was just nominated. Mike Board has done a super job with them. Huffnagel and Dickinson are a wonderful combination to work there. And then Kelly Kissio now, who actually operates similarly to Brian in his role with Mike Moore now taking over as general manager. And I really believe structurally that if you have support systems in place for them among themselves, not me, I'm talking about Kelly and Mike and Huff and Dickinson and Brian and Brad and John and Mike Board, I think you have a better likelihood of success.
As mentioned, Ken King is here. Now, you're the the conglomeration, all of these teams and all these things. You're the president.
The glue.
Yeah,
the keeping glue it all together. What yeah. now? Because it has changed, right? I see when you wear the jacket, you got all the logos up there. This is relatively, yeah. you know, yeah. it's a new thing now.
Well, you know, it was pretty clear to me in the beginning that sports is actually a fairly small business. It's very complicated, as complex as any large businesses, but it has very small infrastructure. So how do you support complex requirements with in a relatively small business is to try and make it bigger, not make it bigger like most people do. Everybody thinks it's a pure money grab. It's not. You need critical mass. You got geniuses like John Bean and Rolly Sear and Jim Bagshaw and those guys. You don't attract people like that to something that is not got a little gravitas to it. So what struck me was that if we added sports assets, what we could do is bring in really high-quality people that would be interested in it. Somebody once said it was some kind of like MLSE light or something, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. It isn't. It's different than that. It will soon include a extraordinarily ambitious building project that extends far beyond an arena. I thought it was just really important that we put together an organization that could sustain itself. I love John Forzani and the guys at the Stampeders. They said, you know what, that team needs to be with a legacy company that knows the business, going to be in the business forever. Those guys saved that team, Forzani and Brister and all of those guys, and that they saw fit to put it in our care for the long term was, I think, a great tribute to the organization.
Is that the goal? Is that the goal for Ken King? I know every year the CFL starts, they want to win the Grey Cup. The NHL starts, you want to win the Stanley Cup. But the goal for the organization, the ownership, yourself, is it that legacy for the city?
These are community assets. I mean, they're private businesses. I was on a CFL call yesterday, and we were talking about a policy issue relative to community-owned teams versus privately-owned teams. And was there any disparity between their motivations, or did anybody have a different view? The fact of the matter is, whether you're community-owned or privately-owned, you better run a really, really good, solid business so you can pay the bills. We know what it's like, particularly in the CFL in the bad old days when people weren't paying their bills. I mean, Stan Schwartz the coach were writing checks for the air charters because the checks didn't clear. So, you really, if you run a super business, nobody cares, and they shouldn't care. What they should care about is winning the Grey Cup, the Stanley Cup, the Memorial Cup, and the Lacrosse Trophy. That's all we really want them to care about. Behind the curtain, what should happen is a well-run, a thoughtful organization, highly ethical, that will look after things that will happen, like things that happened in the NFL or anything like that, with dignity and appropriateness. But everybody should be invested emotionally on the outside, on the inside. Let's just run a really good business. Now, you can have rich guys that will just write checks until they get tired of that. And we've seen that happen, and it's not a good situation. Sports is also now a more material business, so you're not losing a couple of million bucks. If you mess this up, you're going to get into some big money. So run a good business, do that behind the curtain, in front of the curtain, be an ethical, high-performance organization that has a chance to win the championship as quickly as possible in the case of teams that are rebuilding or coming back, and as soon as possible for those teams that are on the cusp.
Seems like the number one question people have is about the new building. You said much more than a hockey rink. I guess, are there any details you can share beyond that you can kind of give us and what that means specifically, well, time frame? Because people are,
you know, we've been working on it. The first drawings that I have in my office are from 2007, believe it or not. So 7 years ago, since we've been working on this, Edmonton's in the ground. This is not a Me Too thing. This is not a Jubilee Auditorium for Edmonton and Jubilee Auditorium for Calgary. Yeah. This is two of the great, all-time great hockey cities in North America that deserve their fans and their cities to have the best facilities in the world. And Edmonton, I think, has moved very close to that, and we're going to move very close to that as well. The reason we've been tight-lipped, and Brian was at a Chamber of Commerce, Brian Burke was at a Chamber of Commerce thing, and he blurted something out, and I said, oh, no, please don't.
We have a state-of-the-art 1988 building? Is that the
all
one?
Well, it wasn't that. All of it was is that it started, and his heart was in exactly the right place. And in a way, grudgingly, I'm kind of happy he said it, but it sets off a whole fuse about, well, taxpayers' money, this, that, and the other thing. When we come forward, and it will be soon, I believe the following will happen. The financial structure for it, people will look at it, nod their head, and say, yeah, okay, that makes sense. We can't sneak into town and run away with your property tax or your school tax or something like that. Lots of equity from the ownership group. Lots of creative approaches. The location is
yeah, we'd like to know, because Rhett and I are going to open a sandwich shop.
Yeah, right beside
And if you can give us an idea, because, that'd be really good.
But our city, there's a rally going on right now, or at 11 o'clock, for a field house. Wouldn't it be cool if there was a field house, a serious field house? People don't understand what field houses are. These are place for summer athletes and winter athletes to work at. And it's a public facility. It's not only for elite athletes. I think it would be reasonable to say that the best before date for McMahon Stadium might be closing in, and clearly the Scotiabank Saddle Dome needs to be replaced. So if you could imagine what could take place, I'm like a little kid at Christmas. I think I know what the present looks like, and I'm dying to open it before Christmas. But we need to. We're seeing some local groups. We're talking to them about the project. We want to garner general support. We want to have the answers to all the questions that people will ask before they ask them, and that's really the work that we are doing now, which, at the risk of being glib or cute, kind of prohibits me from
would there
talking
be any
very much about details today. I'd like to announce it on your show, but I can't.
Would there be anything that would resemble, like you say, what you hope it looks like within North America?
I think there are some cities that have got multiple facilities together. I'm not sure any of them will be quite as dramatic as this in terms of the collective efficiency of what we're trying to do. If we can do it, I mean, you still have to, architects have been working on this for a long time. But if we can pull it off, I think it'll be one of the most transformational projects in the city for the next 50 years.
I believe that. We're dying to put that pub up, me and Red.
Sandwich shop just turned into a pub.
Sandwich shop.
It'll be a hotel.
Ambitious.
Go ahead. Do you want to stay on that line?
Well, it's up to you.
I wanted to go back. You talked about the ethical and obviously the NFL and the hot topics and stuff. Do you have an opinion on how it's gone down in the NFL? Or do you have a different approach you would have taken? Do you think that
I don't think there's anybody in the world.
What would you have done?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's so preposterous. Everybody knows exactly if they were premier, what they would have done, and if they were Roger Goodell, what they would have done. And they have the beautiful insight of the fact that it already happened.
Yeah, the gift of hindsight, right?
Yeah, you're on the spot. Rhett, you've been around. You've all been around. Lots of things happen. And you manage them at the time as best as you think you can. I think that we should have zero tolerance. I think that violence against women, children, or violence against men by men, I don't care, or violence against men by women, I think we should have no tolerance for it. I think I hesitate to say a higher standard, because that makes it sound like professional athletes are more important than somebody else. They're not more important. They just have a much, much higher profile. So I think, and we've run scenarios, what we did immediately, and it was Brian brought it. Okay, if this is us, what would we do? I'm not going to tell you what our response to that would be, but we said if exactly the same thing happened, how would we handle it? There's the whole issue of the legality of innocent until proven guilty, et cetera, people lying or not lying. But we've had situations take place. In all of our teams in one place or another. And you support a player who's in trouble, who's made a mistake. You discipline a player who's made a mistake that requires discipline, and you absolutely cut your ties with behavior that is inappropriate. And I think this would certainly classify that. I don't like Rhett's chances against Christine. I think she'd kill him. But
Well, they're going through a house reno. If it hasn't happened yet.
But don't even think about making a joke about that subject because it's inappropriate. But we certainly have a view. People in glass houses should not throw stones. Uh-huh. Everybody knows exactly what Mr. Goodell should have done after the fact. I'm not an apologist for him. He's got to live with the situation that's been created there. But at our CFL meetings, we talked about it. I know Gary and of course, as you know, Murray Edwards is very deeply involved from an executive committee top of mind, not because of this situation. I mean, this is not the first time that high profile people or athletes
things happen
been in difficult
situations. All walks.
That's
of
right.
Life.
That's right.
Well, now two things. You're going to stay?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to stay?
Us? Yeah, come on, stay.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Now, are either one of you going to get towed? Because as of
just
like 9 o'clock,
no,
things get a little.
I'm getting a ticket.
You're going to ticket.
Well, if it's not towed away already.
You're fine now.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't you have
still running.
Don't you have a little don't you have a little badge up there?
Guy said to me once, King, you don't park cars, you abandon them.
So what we'll do, well, you know what? I do want to talk. Yeah, we'll get the horseback riding story and some other stuff that some behind the scenes stuff. Rhett was saying, well, let's get behind the scenes.
Pull back the curtain.
Like, let's really find out what was going on. Ken King hanging around this morning, the president and CEO of the Calgary Flames. And the Roughnecks and Hitman and
Stampeders,
Champions Cup.
Are you getting? Are you bringing it?
It's a champion.
Yeah,
the
Champions
Inferno?
Cup in the NLL.
The Inferno.
Yeah, we helped the Inferno.
Right on.
Andrew McBride, of course, the captain, great captain.
Listen, these guys are athletes. Holy mackerel! You know, I'd like a cage match.
Yeah.
With each team, and I tell you, lacrosse guys would be there.
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
I don't know who would win, but they would be there.
I don't know. I'm not looking to pump anybody's tire, but. It seems like no matter where you turn, you got Randy Chevrier of the Stampeders working on bullying in high schools. You've got McBride in elementary schools. Giordano's doing stuff. Every one of the hockey players. It's again, we can
part
move
of
on.
The when we talked about an ethical organization, part of a community asset. We never kind of finished that discussion. These are community assets that are privately owned, but the private owners know what their obligation is to the city, and they fulfill that every day.
Are you bring baseball team? That's all you're missing. Can you bring some baseball to Calgary?
You know, it's a great baseball. I threw the first pitch out. I was scared to death. I was going to hit the dirt because I have no rotator cuffs. It's the dog, Oak Took Dogs.
Yeah.
You know, Russ Parker tried so hard with AAA baseball. I mean, they got snowed out every first day of the season. It's just a really, really difficult sport.
Well, maybe with this multi.
But we like hot dogs and
hot
dogs and beer and baseball.
I'm telling you.
I know.
It is great.
It's a great show out there.
It's a great job. They do a really superb job out there. Yeah.
And what is it? It's a June, July season, I think. It's
Short season.
3 months. But it's great baseball.
It is great.
And it's a fun place to be in. And what a surprise. Siemens Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New broadcast crew.
Yeah,
I guess obviously have some thoughts on that. As right across the board, some new faces, new voices.
Well, you know what? I think. Sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, how tough was that to do a switch like that?
Well, impossible. You have the Hall of Fame, Peter Maher. I mean, that's just impossible. But forever in my memory will be burned the elegance of Peter's two and probably soon to be 3, 4, or 5 departure speeches. We're going to feed him on November the
18th,
when Anaheim is here, and it'll be a great night for Peter, and richly deserved. Just all he did was devote almost all of his adult life to being a tremendous supporter of our team, and in some very grim and difficult times. Easy to be a cheerleader when it's going good. Much, much more difficult when it's not. And we've had some lean years, as everybody knows, so... But through that, Peter was unwavering and completely and always enthusiastic about it. So we're very saddened to see Peter go. Derek has got a very tough shoes to fill.
Sure.
But you know what? I listened to him last night and this morning and, of course, watched him in the broadcast booth. And he will not be Peter Maher. He will be Derek, and he'll be great. I think he's got a really cool voice. I think he's, you guys got to bend him up a little bit and wrinkle his suit up a little bit and torture him a little bit.
Yeah, we'll do that.
I'm trying.
That's the man for the job.
Just to loosen him up a little.
We're good at that.
Please don't take him out drinking and ruin his life. I mean, he's a nice young guy, right? He's got a family, and he's a very, very prim and proper
guy.
Yeah,
sure.
So just go easy on the break-in period.
He's like the new guy. He's the new guy in the dressing room. You got to shoot a few pucks at his feet, right?
You know, and Rick and Kelly on TV, I think a great combination. And we really so much appreciate the work that Rob did and Charlie. I think they were there for a long time. So you know what? Everything changes in this business, as broadcast teams have done. And I think the guys that come in will do a superb job. I know I'm supposed to say that, but we actually believe that. And Rogers are really good. They had a short list. They said, "What do you guys think?" They let us talk to them, and they gave us their, I mean, you guys are the pros. You know the technical aspects and that type of thing. All we really wanted to know is, can you come from another city and be devoted, and can you get that tattoo, and can you be one of us real quick? In the world, in the DNA world, the forensic world of sports fans, you guys yourselves can't even hide it. I
don't know what you're talking about.
Underneath the skin may lurk a Bomber fan
or a Ryder
fan or something ridiculous like that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And I can take a polygraph. I'm going to pass. Okay.
So Curtis Glencross, some time ago, is in contract negotiations. He's maybe going to stay with the Calgary Flames. He was brought in, and now he's going to maybe sign a contract. The story comes out that you two went for a horseback ride out at your ranch.
Sounds like something out of Deliverance.
Well, I don't mean it to be, but it's very Albertan.
Horseback ride.
Right?
Doesn't happen in Toronto, I don't think.
Now, how does... Because we've joked about it for years. It's like, oh, who's Ken taking on the horseback ride? How are we going to get him signed? The whole story is kind of not legendary.
Well, Rhett's been out of my place shooting gophers, so any of the Greenpeacers that don't like gopher shooting should
call
contact Rhett immediately.
Thanks for bringing that up.
You know what? That story has been much hyped and much overblown. It gets a little more romantic as time goes on. I don't mean romantic in a Deliverance sense, but we really wanted Curtis to be there, and we were at a level with his. I didn't negotiate. I do not negotiate contracts. Never have. Don't intend to do that. But our group had said, you know what, we're here, and he really needs to know that's where we're at. And all my job was to help Curtis understand that was the bottom line. And if he chose to do something else, we would respect that. We would understand that. But don't be kind of duped into thinking, oh, you know what, we'll just hang on. Rhett, you've been around on a lot of those deadline deals, and guys are led to believe, well, you know what, there's always a little more. There's always a little more. And it messes things up.
Oh,
if you just said, look, should I wait? Should I wait? And then you get into the free agency period and all of those other issues. And in the end, a lot of very loyal and devoted players wind up on teams they never intended to go to for reasons they never thought was going to happen.
I've got numerous examples of that.
And all I ever wanted to have happen was whatever decision you make, Curtis, just make it thorough in the knowledge and comfortable that this is where we are. And there was no coercing. There wasn't anything.
There is
a rumor that my great buckskin horse, Dollar, that he rode, which is a great horse named after John Wayne's great horse, Dollar, that somehow that was part of the deal, which it wasn't, because if it was, it would have cost me a $5 million tampering fine and a lifetime suspension. So Dollar lives and breathes, and Curtis can come and ride him anytime he wants.
Yeah.
So can you, Bozos, if you like.
You don't want to sound like
that. So the legend of the horseback ride with Curtis and Ken is more mythology than fact. But it did happen.
We just need him to score the game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup Finals to really make that a legendary.
Yeah, this never would have happened without that fateful day.
He's due for another horseback ride. He needs a new deal this summer.
15 years, roughly, or exactly?
Yeah, coming up on it.
So peaks and valleys and bumps in the road. Are there any stories? I mean, I always go back to 04 because it hits home with us. And it was, unexpected.
Yeah.
Are there other unexpected things that have happened that you look back on and go chuckle about now or really stick out for you? It's one of those vague questions.
And there's lots of them, right? The first game, which was an exhibition game, and, you know, you tear up a little bit. And you say, holy cow, this is a real thing here. I guess people coming and going, I remember saying at the opening press conference, I don't understand the professional sports management theory. Firings will continue till morale improves. I just thought it was a really strange way to run a business. And as it turns out, I understand that a little bit more, not completely. I don't think it's a necessary part. I don't think you need to hire a coach to fire a coach. I don't think you need to hire a GM to fire a GM. I think it happens a lot. I have a far greater appreciation and understanding how it might or could happen. But I do think there's too much vested in some areas. I was, as you know, liberally accused of meddling, which was never true. I think primarily that comes from disenchanted people who leave the organization and who want not to blame pure hockey or pure sports people. They need to blame an outsider like me. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's okay if I got fired by Ken, who doesn't know anything, but it's not okay if I got fired by Daryl, because Daryl is smart and everybody respects him. So I get that.
Mm-hmm.
It was not accurate. My definition of meddling is if you cause someone to do something they would not otherwise do, or if you stop them from doing something. Now, would I ever have wanted to? You bet. But that's like the NFL question. In hindsight, absolutely. But 2004 was a very special time. I walked out of that building, and I remember, and I'm not blaming Jordan Leopold, but it was just that about 6 inches above that goalie stick. And of course, you go back to Vancouver, right, with the jersey on the ice. And
fell over backwards on the bench.
Exactly. Right, and but for 30 seconds, 2004 doesn't even exist. And that, to me, is the whole magic of the business, right? 2004 changed the entire dynamic, thanks to you and your teammates, changed the entire trajectory of what we were trying to do and getting people to believe in what we were trying to do. And it was a millisecond away from not happening at all, but it did happen, and it was the stuff now of legends.
What kind of calls must you have been getting when just organically thousands of people are going to 17th Avenue?
Yeah, I mean,
because people have to be. Hey, what? You can't have your fans down here, because I would have to have guessed. Well, as much as people loved it, there had to have been some people not really enchanted with the fact of tens of thousands of people down in downtown.
I'd never gone there, and we were coming back from Detroit, and we flew back from Detroit, and I said, well, I'm going to drive down. It was like 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and there was people there. It was very, very strange, and I think Craig Conroy was on the radio at the same time when we were driving down Deerfoot. But so there's that, but there's also, I mean, there are sad parts of the business, the human part of it. If you have any soul at all, you'll understand that success and failure and trades and firing people and different things like that have a toll on humans and families. I think, Rhett, of your colleagues and their families and their kids, through all the good and through all the challenging times and everything else. But I guess above all, the people in this city have been so awesome. I think of the thousands of people, and I, by the way, I know my place, and it happened, and you were there when the kid came up, and he'd gotten all the autographs from everybody, and he was up to my knee, and he looked up at me and said, hey, mister, are you somebody? And I said, no. And one of the other guys said, no, he ate anybody. and it was a perfect moment. And the behind the scenes stuff, you know, some of those difficult things that took place that you need to deal with, and then mistakes, right? Things you wish you had never said.
Yeah.
And things you wish you had said, and things you wish you had said more eloquently or better. Again, not for me. Peter Maher's the most selfless guy I've ever heard. And if you could emulate that, this team endured for 15 years before I got there, and it's going to endure for 150 years after I'm gone. But this moment in time while I'm there is a spectacular privilege, made so mostly by this great city and the fans that are in the city. Really it is.
And I don't even know how to put this as a question. You're walking around. You go to the GM meetings, and you're representing the Calgary and the city of Calgary. And you go into these meetings, and you guys have a poker event that raises $500,000. You have a golf tournament that raises hundreds of thousands of dollars. Every event you put on is supported by the fans and the community and the business in this town. I don't know. It has to be awfully proud, because in Buffalo, if you have a charity event and you raise $20,000, you've done well. And it's not a slight against it, but just the support that you get from the business and the community, does it help? Pretty proud to walk into the other places and go, hey, you guys, you don't got this.
You know, culturally, and I think you're talking a little bit about culture, and don't forget the Retro's Bolarama in that long list of august charity enterprises. No, it's true, though. I think Calgary is a great city. Now, we always thought that Calgary would be a great city to recruit to, and it has been, more or less. Mm-hmm. If your team is doing better, it's a little easier. If you can see, you know, we lost a player recently who said, I think I can get to my goal quicker over here. And I said, you know what, we love you. We appreciate everything you did for us, and we hope to prove you dead wrong, that we'll get to that end goal quicker than the route that you have chosen. And who knows if either of us will ever get there, but it is a very proud time, and Calgary has a great reputation as a city. Alberta has a great reputation as a province. Hockey is a really, and all professional sports. I mean, not very many cities can support three pro teams and one amateur team. To the degree that they do in this city. And it's the United Nations of sports, right?
Yeah. I mean,
there is a Rider jersey under a Red jersey hiding, and there is a Bomber jersey, and there is a Montreal jersey and Edmonton jersey and a Vancouver jersey, and they all waggle their finger at me and say, oh, don't worry, Ken, I'll be wearing my Flames jersey next game. Right. Yeah. But that's cool too. So, but your question is right. It is a great pride to stand up and say you're from Calgary.
You have business to attend to. We've taken an hour of your time.
He's got to get his car.
Got to get your car off
to the impound lot.
I got to go to the impound lot. And
it's hanging off
car.
The end of a tow truck. And it's, you think back to 2004, and it's not comparable, but I feel there's an energy here for this team right now. It's not the same, but there's for the first time, maybe since the lockout and then that first round exit, I feel like there's a renewed enthusiasm here.
There is absolutely no question. And that began, you never know exactly when it is. Some people think it began with that face-off in Vancouver. other people think it started with Bob Hartley, and other people think it started with a great draft pick. There's lots of magic moments in this business, but clearly there is a new spirit and a new feeling for the Flames, and continued great spirit for our other teams, and that's everything. That's emotional equity. You know, business-wise, we talk about financial equity. It's emotional equity. And with emotional equity in sports, you make deposits. And there was a huge deposit made into our account in 2004, thanks to Rhett and his friends. And in 1989, which that deposit still counts. And I loved what Rhett said the other day at Peter's farewell when he said, you know, we're a little bit jealous of you guys. I thought that was really cool. And I hadn't heard it put that way, but jealous in a nice way, respectfully jealous, I guess. You know, we wanted to do what you did, and we want to do what they did, and we want to do what Rhett did in 2004. Finish that thing there. And that's why we play the games, and that's why we're all like farmers. We're putting another crop in, and we don't get hailed out. We don't get rained out. We get the crop off. God willing, we will make our city just a little bit happier and a little bit prouder of its sports assets. And if we could actually do that, I think it would be great. And to your point, I think there is a renaissance of spirit.
Thanks for the visit.
Bless your heart.